Hey there, welcome to Saz and Bond Podcast. I'm your host, Anna Dana, head of growth at Saz Group, serial acquirer buying wonderful Saz businesses to take them to the next level. And here I chat with inspiring founders and experts to get an inside scoop on how they make their business a success. So today with me is Alex, CEO and founder of Competera, a pricing platform helping retailers increase their revenue. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Anna, for inviting me.
Sure, absolutely. I know just a very little about your background and, you know, the history of the company, but one of the things I know is that you've been actually working with machine learning and automation and everything that we call AI these days for quite a while. So maybe let's start with your background.
Yeah, perfect, Anna. Yeah, this is true. I actually finished Kyiv Polytechnic University, and it was an interesting project between Polytechnic University and MET University. And this was a kind of opportunity to jump on the extra 1 year of studying and getting like medical engineering, or like call it like this is computer science. It was medical computer science, telemedicine, they called. And yeah, and this my diploma, final diploma was around electronic nose. As back 2005, we trained the computer to smell the picture. The whole idea was to recreate the smell as a picture, not compare with the diagrams using several sensors. And as any engineer, machine learning and AI is just a type of algorithm that was really more applicable for that things, what we try to achieve. Again, just who are technical, you know, they know that, who knows today, they know that 2005 is actually where there's a first level regression models came to play, very one-liner models. Again, just for time reference, 7 years after that is that Google acquired DeepMind, what actually Deep Research, what became the Google DeepMind. I mean, it was 7 years before AI started be visible for big corporations. Yeah, and since then, honestly, as an engineer, I just feel the potential of this technology and they understand maybe the application in those kind of uncertain environment. Yeah, and this Pro gives me very cool baseline for that future understanding where the best way to apply those machine learning.
So how did you end up in pricing platforms from medical degree? Well, medical science, okay, computer, but still.
Very fun story. Yeah, actually, during the university, I run the outsourcing company. We did like a lot of websites. When I saw the first iPhone, I immediately recognized that the future would be the mobile internet. And the whole idea of my team, we just rebuild the websites, making them mobile friendly. Later on, they one of the first developers of apps for App Store for like corporates. And my focus was only kind of enterprise all the time in my life in enterprise. Enterprise customers like Gillette, Prada, we did the websites for them and first mobile applications. Yeah, and doing so, guys, I was kind of outreached by Big Four. I can mention the company name, but who can check my LinkedIn profile can find it. Yeah, and they're looking for actually someone who can help them to optimize a lot of work. Technically, they acquired my company, like they bought a like control package. They honestly needed me rather than the company itself. And my job became to oversee the operations, technically optimize the work of analysts and consultants inside the corporation. And this one of the big team, like it's not happens immediately, honestly, it was like years and years. And 1 year when I'm searching for the next big thing to optimize, I found this is a huge group of people technically sitting in Excel and charging customers 16,000-20,000. Can you imagine, Anna, a year to recommend them a price optimization? And honestly, how it looks, it was Excel with a very simple kind of elasticity calculation thing and login page on top. And by the way, most of the customers wasn't happy. I just go to the customers and plus my teammates who are working on that saying, Alex, this is we do all the time this monkey work year over year, takes a lot of times. I saw that machine learning can solve this thing more or less easily. Secondly, cloud computer growing. I feel like this can be calculated in cloud. Just very, very honestly, a napkins idea. And I pitched this to my boss, my direct boss. He was happy with that. You say, hey, look, we can like free maybe 15,000 hours per year, like just doing this for one customer. And honestly, those calculations also was running like by annually or quarterly for very, very how to say, rich customers. Yeah, Ian, but as usually it happens in the big corporation, this your direct boss impressed, but someone who makes the real money, he told me, Alex, you're killing our business. We design for cash for hours, not for subscription. Can you imagine I pitched this in 2014, like that AI can do pricing? Yeah, this is how I got to this idea. But guys, long story short, if you think that my connection at that company and this everything goes smoothly, it probably is only can happen in yellow pages or in TechCrunch. But the real story was it was really hard to push even internally. And I had a fight with my teammates that I was really stick around for next year. And actually nothing is moving in that direction. And I came one day back and say, hey, guys, look, are we building or I am leaving? Guess what they choose? This now I'm sitting here with you, you know. But again, a good story to say that we are start building this. And honestly, my boss was right. In 2014, maybe some part of your audience who kind of technical, they immediately understand that the compute that time wasn't really perfect. And guys, like even having I did have some research, and I immediately that of course this corporation disconnect me from all data sources and build machine learning in the data. And I'm not Sam Altman. I don't have a Azure credits for $19 billion to play with. It needs to be also profitable or at least show some sense in ROI. Yeah, and when we did our first calculations, guys, it was take so much compute power. No, like literally, I can give you like real numbers. It was around £300,000, the deal itself. Of course, not paid upfront. Who pay upfront to start up anything? And I paid Google $260 of that. Big CUDA for Google. Ask for credits, they actually die time also. They give something, but it was end up in like in one day or something. Yeah, and it was good news, it works. Bad news, my unit economics or margin on outsourcing business was much better than that. Yeah, it takes a while, guys. It takes me 4 years to iterate and find the way to go forward. But honestly, most is was just driven because the blockchain, all this kind of GPUs, the efficiency of the compute changed. We did optimization, but honestly speaking, most of those just the industry developed in that way that machine learning became affordable. They're still expensive. A lot of people are building consuming apps is really still expensive on top of this GPT wrappers. At that time, it was crazy expensive, guys. Who's telling me right now this expensive? Like, just call me. I will tell you what it was like in 2015, 16.
What expensive means. Yeah, it's interesting that you said you were always thinking about working with enterprise, and you were always just considering working with enterprise. And, you know, I think there will be quite a few founders arguing that, they do pay a lot and they do have budgets to play around, maybe even. But first of all, the sales process is super difficult and it's long, and you have to have compliance and you have to have the trust. And at the same time, when you're still quite small, they do have a lot of power on, you know, influencing you and tell you, okay, we just want you to be that. And the risk there is to become their feature, basically. So how did you deal with that? And have you managed to avoid those mistakes?
Yeah, Anna, you're absolutely right. For everyone who is listening, if you're not from enterprise world, or you don't have a co-founder who from that world, please run away. That really, all what you said, 100% true. They try to influence your backlog. My first customer has my personal phone number. They call me day and night. Secondly, that's really painful in terms of fighting for with the procurement, with all those legal stations, etc. That is really, really hard. And honestly, honest true guys, I never told this, by the way, publicly in the podcast. We didn't want to start enterprise. We really tried to do it like at Amazon and actually Alibaba, Amazon. What happens when we start figuring this, say, of course, you're right, this best way. I'm still a big fan of speaking with the customers, guys. It doesn't mean like you shouldn't speak. And this kind of, I also saw some founders thinking if they build SMB product, it means that they can put the landing page in place and run it and everything goes smooth. No, you should speak with the customers. Speak with 30, 40. This is why one friend of mine, they created very cool, powerful analytics for YouTube. he spoke himself with 300 e-commerce players, those video podcasters professionally before he launched the SMB product, what starts like at $15.99 or something. Yeah, but what happens, you know, the guys, the problem is when launched this at Amazon, months two or three, Amazon blocked our request, our API key. We start negotiating, we start exploring what happens, and they say it's prohibited. To be able to machine learning, to advise on the price, we need to merge several data sets, like different APIs. And actually, this is basically prohibited by Amazon law rules, because Amazon want to play, you know, if you want to win in casino, you should own the casino. And it was against any tools were trying to actually fight with Amazon behavior pricing, that it's available for them, but not for sellers. And in that moment, it actually very politely asked, hey guys, what are you trying to do? Like, we explained, like, we'll give you more credits. And guess what happens? They just blocked us completely. And then the block API, we start asking sellers to give us API keys for their API developers that we request Amazon under their credentials. And they actually blocked the way how we ask and iterate with API. It means that you see that they didn't block the key, they blocked the way how we use the key. And that we immediately pivoted to Alibaba because it was kind of in our kind of AliExpress in our roadmap as well. There, by the way, API was much more powerful than Amazon that day. And more or less, Anna, the same situation happened. They blocked the API, then asked, hey, describe please what you're trying guys to do. We will give you more credits. And we'll say, I know what this lead to. And I send them a very cool, polite email. And they invited me to have a chat with their head of merchandising, the guy who actually is responsible for these packages of the, you know, the merchants, they pay to be listed at Amazon or Alibaba. They're like a paid subscription. Say, hey, Alex, it's a nice idea. We want you to become the part of our subscription policy, which is old school idea. And guess what? I'm grabbing the tickets. I'm flying to Indonesia, Jakarta. It was my first and last time I've been there. Like, you can stuck like 3 hours in traffic. You can order the food in the car or massage. That was crazy. But anyway, I spent there like very intensive day where we end up saying, they said, hey, we want to buy your license. And I was super excited. Can you imagine? I back to office and guys, we have a deal. We have a license deal with Ali Group. And then when they send us the proposal, it looks like this one time deal. It means that they want to buy the license one time, few years of support and bye bye. I say, guys, this does not work like that. I want a revenue share, etc. Long story short, we were negotiating for around 6 months. I even started looking for the good VC who can, because the Chinese companies, they always try to, I was advised multiple friends saying, Alex, be careful with China. It was really true. Their behavior was exactly the same. Hey, if we can't buy it, let's us invest, but we can't invest in the US company. We going to invest in our China branch. Can you create the China branch? The China branch is co-founded by their partner who actually owned it by them. It was a long story, guys. I wasted like 6 months of actually doing the product on this kind of legal, again, as enterprise sales, which is I wasn't prepared enough. Yeah, and this is how we pivoted to enterprise. At the same time, I have the enterprise accounts who are ready to pay six-figure deals in day one, you know, rather than, and I honestly, we just calculated how much it will take us to fight and build this customer. Honestly, again, nothing bad about PLG products, but launch them, especially in modern world, despite all these Gen AI tools, like I can bet that this takes 100,000, 300,000 at least to get it really to MSVP stage. Plus, imagine there's some marketing budget. It easy can go over like $1 million or $2 million pure cash. And Computera was bootstrapped for years. And where I see on that other pocket, I see the enterprises who understand the problem can pay immediately. And even 2-3% of optimization give us hundreds of million dollars, sorry, thousands of millions in optimization profit. Yeah, this is how we pivoted. And by the way, just since last few months, we are launching right now with one of our X product managers, the version for SMB. It takes our 7 years to come to this point back. And the Computera for SMBs will be also available soon.
Okay, that's a super interesting story. Long story short, yeah. But it's also, you know, I don't know how you were marketing it before, but, you know, now that I hear a lot of stories of companies going to enterprise saying, hey, we have this AI solution for you. And there is also a lot of argument towards, you know, how are we going to control this? This is AI. We don't know what it reads, what kind of information it has access to. So how do you convince companies right now? And were there any issues before?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Honestly, guys, still the adoption of enterprise level applied AI, like not the AI that you used to writing your emails, but honestly, even there, you're right, there are like a lot of legislation problems. The overall adoption AI in enterprise less than 3%, guys. AI is in enterprise is very, very behind. And what they all working right now towards, there's, of course, private deployment, model control. We start even receiving right now, guys, RFPs, where is a separate tab saying like AI guardrails or AI legislations. This is like, you saw the EU has released AI Safety Act that you can be, that it should be compliant. Yeah, again, how we address this is still not there. Still, we're getting a lot of pushbacks because you're right. This is, first of all, enterprise companies don't want the even hash. Your cache be somewhere outside. It means that you can't use most of the public models like available, etc. It could be, best case should be fine-tuned in their perimeter or on premise deployment, etc. But it's all, honestly, it's all right now, the infrastructures allow this. I mean, we passed through this ICO, SOC 2 compliance. Yeah, this guy's around 6-8 months work on that. But enterprise right now, all of them, the good news, they all of them right now have the agenda to start making money on enterprise, because right now on AI enterprises, only NVIDIA make money on AI in enterprise. No one else. Only else, they're really spending money there. It's like, I just was on this March. This, guys, the March 2025, big conference in Las Vegas, where top five CTOs of biggest commerce platforms sitting on the stage, including like Wayfair and other guys, and the moderator give them like a quick battlefield and say, guys, you have 30 seconds. Tell me what AI innovation you actually implemented last year, because as AI knows, it's the second year I had, that you're happy and can share. Silence, Anna. Silence. They say, we try to generate even the text description for the products, but it still required the human overseeing a lot of hallucinations. We need to be compliant with specific rules. And for us, it's cheaper still buying. Or big telecom company saying, do you think, guys, you can really replace your support manager with AI, where like average token without proper orchestration and caching those requests? Answer, each answer will cost you 8 to 10, 15 cents, which is like, sorry, guys, but people from Vietnam or Philippines, 10 times cheaper. And they're still humans, and they already having them, rather than paying these millions to OpenAI and, again, fight with those legislation, training, this, etc. Yeah, I mean, it's still coming. The good news is coming that way. This became cheaper in the first glance, and secondary, more secure. And this is, I see a lot of companies right now, are honestly growing, who are actually making enterprise using public models through those kind of re-hosting those models, optimizing them, guardrailing them, etc. Yeah.
So to that question that you just said was at the conference, what about you guys? What kind of AI initiatives do you have at Computera that you're happy with?
Yeah, this is so fun that we are, in general, we're happy that our customers are happy that, and they finally turning back and saying, hey, we are really want to have applied AI. It means that AI what works and can beneficial to your P&L. Yeah, of course, in our case, this is most of the, it's not a whole code base. Of course, my CTO is super against any vibe coding thing, but of course, co-piloting the developer is right now is a cool tool that can watch your screen and deploy on your laptop. They're watching the screen, for example, of the front-end developer, and then can really, with the prompting them, having those part of the code base, what he's working on. I feel like, again, this VAP coding thing is good for front-end. This is like quite robust. For back-end thing or microservices is almost impossible because you need to keep the context of these tools and overall architecture, what is still like really big problem. That we use a Kodi, we're using some kind of those co-pilots for coding or for code commenting. As well, we don't have HR in the company. This is AI. That you can really do a lot of kind of internal requests, etc. Just speaking with AI, we have a huge knowledge base that can be thrown quickly answering the RFI questions, or someone forget about some functionality of the product. It's kind of some conversational CI will just speed up efficiency and speed of your development, or even searching the information. A lot of stuff we're doing on the sales side, of course, is very obvious. For example, transcripting the call and then putting in the CRM, the right outputs, and actually highlighting what sales guys forgot to ask and asking, suggesting them great follow-up on this. I think in this case, just productivity very much increased. We also decreased numbers of SDRs and BDRs we need to work. It's like right now, one guy can work as a 10 guys with all those tools. Yeah, I think this is multiple implications. And yeah, we honestly, because we are SEO is so compliant, we also can't use and even test bunch of the tools what we wish to have. But we can't because they're still not compliant. You saw it like those Fireflies was banned. And right now, more and more enterprise companies banning the Fireflies is the most advanced note taker. And actually, I think they're, if they probably they used to have plans to go public because they were growing as a crazy, but now there's a huge problem. The SoftBank blocked them. And of course, the whole, the SoftBank customers portfolio of the SoftBank, all those companies will not use Fireflies anymore and until they will fight with this. And this is why we still, unfortunately, don't really select even the tools that we can use.
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't think anyone has ever said their HR is AI here. Like everyone says marketing, everyone says productivity tools. No one said HR. How big is the team?
We have 90 people team. Yeah, maybe 100 would be soon.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. All like, right.
This is very cool stuff that, you know, we have this knowledge base, right? The company vision, all the strategy. People boring, people lazy. They will never read despite how often you update all those statements. And our, we call this Galava AI, like a head AI. He knows everything. Or you can say, hey, what's my policy about sick leave? How I do this and that? And it's very interesting. It's like, not guys worry something complicated, it's just a rug with some specific kind of tables that you can feed in with your profile, etc. Yeah, just work directly in Slack. Yeah.
How many meetings do you guys have on average?
This is a good thing. You know, like we as a company, very big fans of this, like we call the 666 framework, what was actually widely famous from Intercom adopted this. It means that every 6 months if we review our 6 year strategy and act like in the 6 weeks run is a 3 sprints. And we have this big meeting on the whole company, hands-on meeting every 6 weeks, technically. Then 2 weeks of this, 1 week is a retrospective and 1 week is a planning. And end of the planning week, we have this company-wide meeting where each department present their innovations. And that those OKR achievements, technically the OKR framework was framed over 6 weeks runs. And this minimized those meetings a lot. And I'm a big fan of, we call it this asynchronous meeting types. It means that if you want to present something, you record the video and you place the calendar blocker to the team what you want to speak with. They related the video and a Q&A form that you not spend time on the meeting on speaking. And actually, this is honestly not super straight policy right now, but we actually banned any meeting what is longer than 30 minutes in the company. Like it should be have a multiple excuses why that meeting should be longer than 30 minutes. Yeah. And this is free up a lot of calendars because you're right. It's most of the teams are really struggle with this endless meetings, what never ends, what creates the backlog, what you never actually coming back to. That's why this is what we use. But it's, for me, it's hard to say how many of them. I'm participating only in a few.
Yeah. I think that's a good idea. I'm actually, I started thinking about this asynchronous meeting kind of situation for myself, because as you know, I'm based in Vietnam and for everyone, well, not everyone, but most of the team I work with is in Europe or the US. And sometimes, so, you know, I spare their very early mornings and don't have to on the other side of the world sit in a meeting at 8 p.m. That would be, yeah, I'm still, you know, nothing is implemented yet, to be completely honest, but maybe I can pick your brain a little bit later on how you guys make it happen.
Easy. But sorry for that, but stand-ups, I mean, the guys, this is important. I mean, if you're saying that is for you, the team, to stand up, to plan the week, we do have this executive stand-up on Mondays, like it's the technically retro of the previous week and the future week, but we try to minimize as much as possible, like, yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. All right. So I also want to ask you about this never-ending debate of bootstrap versus funded. And you guys have been bootstrapping for a while, but now you already raised, right? Yeah, you already raised a couple of rounds. You know, why did you go that way? And do you think at this point, if you were doing AI, you cannot go bootstrapped?
This episode is sponsored by Rewardful. Looking for new ways to find customers for your SaaS business? Consider building an affiliate program. Rewardful is the easiest affiliate tracking platform to set up, manage, and scale for SaaS companies. Building a successful affiliate program can be a little bit intimidating at first, and that's why Rewardful has taken what they've observed from their most successful customers' affiliate programs and distilled that into an exclusive online course. The exciting part? Their affiliate marketing course is absolutely free. Start the course at academy.rewardful.com. academy.rewardful.com. And turn your biggest fans into your best marketers.
Good question. Honestly, it's always like a skaters versus the rollers or snowboarding versus like skiing, bootstrap versus funded. I mean, for my philosophy was always the following, that the money can buy you the time. If you're confident that money with your truck, we see money, most expensive money, guys, in the world. Like, most cheapest money, guess who is this? Customer's money, right? And this is if you can really grow initially from kind of money what the company is paying. And I know a lot of amazing founders, what was never funded. And even our original investors, they were like above $100 million in IRR, team of 100 people, never funded. Right. And you can make it. And I still like more adept of the bootstrapping, but you're right. It depends where, for example, what you build. Imagine, Anna, we are working with you on some, I don't know, next cure from cancer. And this is just impossible to make it without the funding. And I think in my case, I underestimate the complexity and speed of those research, what I can do. And I wish I will back in the days get more money, but it was again, in Ukraine, it was really hard to find that size of money. We then raised like $1 million seed round, and it was like the biggest seed round in Ukraine that year. That I know for that problem today, people will maybe raise at least 10. But knowing what we build, how much money and people we need to deploy, especially for breaking those enterprise sales, as you mentioned. And for example, I heard very cool advice from a CRO of Slack, initial CRO. He said, Alex, a lot of advice is they'd given by hiring executive, then hire CRO. No, can you imagine in startup, you need to hire someone who can sell something what actually wasn't, the people doesn't know they have this problem. And it's like new problems. This is twice harder to sell it. You can't hire just a regular or mediocre sales guy. It needs to be so advanced, the guy who can really push it through the borders. Yeah, and sorry again, long answer your question. This about your personal confidence. In my case, I feel like if I can sell it, I feel just market is not ready. I don't have this virtual background and what I usually use in my office. We won this award in London in 2018. It was AI Summit in London. It's regularly taking place. 2018 was 2,000 startups. It was 3 graduated. We were one of them. This AI Summit, like they called like best applied AI in industry. But guess what? I got this award. I was on the Wired. I was twice in Forbes, like big articles. But it doesn't help me to sell. It was exactly like a drone delivery. You know, everyone's speaking about them, but no one really using. Taking the money from investors, and they will ask you to spend that money, right? And it's take money, do not spend the same issue that spend it wrong. And I feel like market wasn't ready. You know, it doesn't matter how many sales guys I will hire, they will not accelerate my growth. Because the problem is the market is not understanding AI, not appreciating AI in general. Like this why I wish to, but you need to balance. For me, it's always a simple principle. If you have in your mind, as a founder, you have this gut feel, now is time. Now is the momentum where to press the acceleration pedal. If you don't have this in mind right now, I prefer better to not rise. Take your friends and family money or bootstrap. Continue bootstrapping till you find this momentum. Otherwise, it would be a tough journey. Yeah, this is my personal opinion.
All right. Yeah, thanks for sharing it. And I mean, since you guys are doing pricing for big enterprise customers, how are you approaching it yourself? And maybe if you had this one pricing strategy advice to give to other founders, what would it be?
Perfect. Great. In terms of pricing their product, you mean?
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, guys, this is a big topic, but I always say, first of all, care about ISP, your ideal customer profile, because as much as you know the person what you're going to sell, it can be several of them, right? This is will completely determine how you market this. That means that how big is your customer acquisition cost? And third one, of course, how much you need to charge. This is very cool guy, Joe York, and I will follow up you with one link to the deck that I will rephrase as like few slides what I usually advise startups how to start thinking about the pricing. And of course, we can start like saying like this is kind of usage-based pricing right now. This is just a tool, guys. The first thing what you need to thought about who your audience is, how they make money, what actually you bring the value to them. And depends on that, you will easily determine your pricing. This Joe York in my field saying, answering on the how much it costs you to lend the customers actually answer on your cost of your product. For example, give you like real example, Computera's customer acquisition cost, our cost today is like $65,000 or $70,000 per customer. And this, by the way, not big. We had the company who tried to acquire us. They actually have even ACV, average contract value, lower than ours. Their customer acquisition cost was $150,000. They have a Trump's in San Francisco branded under their name. As guys, what the sense? Again, they technically healthy back to investors, right? And I like them for that because they give you like really good cold shower saying, good, the best guys, B2B SaaS companies, doesn't matter. They're like your small SMB like Figma or you like Computera, like big enterprise, 6-7 figure contract lens. This is all about your LTV should be higher than CAC at least 3 times is number one. The second thing, you need to return customer acquisition cost less than in 12 months. But same time, HubSpot, Intercom, all those guys returning in 5-7 months. This very simple math. It means that if you're returning your CAC too quick, it means that you underprice your product. If you're returning, your return is above 12 months, you underprice your product. That's it. And if you have no customer, if your customer acquisition cost is lower than LTV or you struggle to calculate LTV right now, is not time to monetize your product. You should continue speaking with the customers and see my most advice of the cost for if you product-led growth, you don't have at least 100 customers using you right now, paid, turn off, and you have a pricing page on your site, turn off it, please. Take it off, start speaking with the customer. Price, even despite you see on the metrics, people go and click on the pricing page. Of course. They do. This one of the your human brain, all the life-changing decisions you made last years is always one of the trends is the price. Like, can I afford this girlfriend? Can I afford this car? Or can I afford this apartments to buy, right? It's always price in play. But early days, you need to speak. And I spoke with like hundreds of accounts. Even we started, by the way, with SMBs, our base plan was at $80, then I increased to $3,000 a month. And guess what? Conversion will remain the same. We just start charging 10 times more. And this deck, what I will share with you, I'm highlighting this kind of our early search of the ISP. But actually, this ISP, the customer, what you're going to sell to, what drives the sales team and marketing team, what you will need to build repeatable sales. And again, if this enterprises, your probably customer acquisition cost will be around 100,000. That means that your product needs to be at least 7-8K per month to be able to replicate the sales process. Because again, sales guy, if you have it, needs to bring you at least 4X his revenue, his salary back to the P&L. 4X, by the way, Jensen Lankin, you know guys probably who it is, the best sales like... He will told you like at least 10x, but I never saw it like 6-5x more or less. But it's true. It means that if the sales guy is not returning you 5x, he needs to have at least 10 closed deals. And if you boring him with like $100 deals to close, it just math doesn't work. Like using like premium cars to drive your grandmothers to the kindergarten is possible, but this have no sense and not repeatable. Yeah, this is by the way, a lot of startups are really fail. due to this, the kind of wrong assumption of their pricing model. And Anna, you was right. I know, like we spoke about off mic this. In United States, due to like real big access to the money, you can be misled. For example, you know that Uber wasn't profitable for years and they give the iPhones to any drivers. Or Sam Altman publicly said multiple times that average cost for user is around $2,000 per month, not 20. Can you imagine? It's 100 times difference in their unit economics. But assume, guys, do you have this access to that money and you can do that way? Fine, do it. You will gap the market and then you figure out how you made your unit economics worse. And I remember the huge, was huge push of those shared economy, like e-bikes, e-scooters, they're all around in all countries. Where are they all right now? Gone, right? Only the companies who was ride sharing by taxi cars and food delivery, they're still keeping them, but same time in much less exposure again, because they said they like scooters can survive for 3-4 months. Real statistic is 20 days. The average electric e-bike or e-scooter, their life, they are like just destroyed in the next 45 days. It means that unit economics completely doesn't work. Yeah, and you need to have a huge push to make it really works. And that's why I actually dropped a few posts on my LinkedIn. Dangerous the founders, especially if you build the ChatGPT wrappers. Be careful with your unit economics and SaaS and CAC to LTV ratio from day zero, because you can spray and pray that the price will go down, but it's my 50% chance as any probability.
I just, as I was listening to you, I thought I need to bring you and our head of M&A into one room just to let you talk, because this is golden. As acquirers, obviously we care about that a lot, and there's acquisitions are always big talks about numbers.
Easy. I can easily show you what metrics we follow and why we follow them, and like where's, because again, when you're bootstrapping, you need to be like agile and fit, you know, otherwise you just not survive through these kind of stories.
Yeah, I think it would be awesome if you share something, because believe it or not, I think when we have a podcast or an AMA about pricing, they always get the most attention from founders. Apparently, it's a real struggle. But back to you. You know, we still have a few minutes left of this podcast. You know, so far bootstrapping, being VC backed, growing the company, what has been the biggest win and the biggest failure?
I think for us the biggest win, that it was my dream to build a software that can be used by Fortune 100 companies. And can you imagine, we're pushing off like Oracle of this world and out of the small tiny team. And we already have and serving like a few of that huge accounts, and the more is going to come. And it's like for us a super big achievement, like saying, wow, can you imagine that those guys are using us? Yeah. And the failure, honestly, right now, if you're agile enough in the 6CC framework, you're not allowed to be failed the big. But my learning, especially like if you're building guys enterprise, they really can kill your business. I mean, even if something written in the agreement, it doesn't mean they can follow. And most organizations, like especially like the founders who live in this, I call it pink glasses, thinking if they try to fight with a big organization, is excited, they will come and say, Anna, here's like $1 billion, I want to acquire you. Guys, no, they will try all the possible ways to put you down first. And only if they can, they come to acquire you. This is kind of the biggest learning. You can't imagine how many times we was involved, like voluntarily and not voluntarily, in some kind of like strategic partnership. What was sold as a kind of cooperation with revenue share was ending brain drank meetings and trying to acquire us, you know, or shut down the technology. And this kind of things that probably my biggest fear, I was too kind of say, open and too kind of bright for this kind of dark world to believe that our corporations are really kind and really excited what you're doing. They just, and you need to be careful. Don't trust anyone. Trust only your team and the great people around you. All the rest, I say you should be really protective to that.
We had a conversation with us on one side and then M&A advisors on the other side, just kind of trying to map the M&A process for founders a little bit. And I asked them, like, what is the great acquirer? What are we looking for if we're founders? The advisor that was on the other side said, yeah, look for someone who just acquires. So acquiring businesses is their business. So someone like SaaS Group, for example, look for somebody who's already acquired somebody like you. Look for strategic and only the last, only if you have to look for acquirers among your competitors, because that's probably not what they're after.
By the way, yeah, and this topic really gives me, this is after this few of this very strange, it's probably worse than another podcast where we speak about like this failed strategic M&As, and it's like, you're right, there's a bunch of the stories, probably more than successful stories, of course. Most think what I realized that, my guys, please have your M&A advisor early days. It's like your lawyer. You can't rely on lawyer of your investors. If you don't have your legal team, and you will rely on legal team of, or the legal will work on that guy who paying the money. And this is, in our case, was really rough. Like I saw the guys, look, I'm feeling like I'm on the meeting where like a three professional box or football player sitting on the table, on the table, and me who never played football before, or just once with a classmates, you know, this kind of, you need to have your really trusted M&A advisors as early as you can and build those relations, similar as they will protect your rights. And even despite, honestly, Anna, between us, I also has a story where those M&A advisors was early days, but that customers who want to acquire, they was also their customers. And I think this honestly create mutual conflict of interest, and right M&A firm will never, never work with their portfolio company acquire another portfolio company, because it creates kind of incentive for them to not play fairly. This is why it should be, as you know, the right lawyers, they will never, if, for example, they assess the risk. This is why story is not my story. Story is my friend. They are like big app store developer, like very big. They Tim Cook know them, etc. And they was banned in Germany for like some of their applications was going to ban immediately. And ban came from Amazon, because Amazon has IP rights on that. And they're super lawyers, where they spending millions of dollars a year on them, saying, we can't help you because Amazon is our customer. Sorry, here's like few lawyers that you can work with. You know, like they were super pissed off, because this is kind of things what you need to compare. Yeah, and then the right M&A that needs to be kind of independent, and you but it should play on your side. Like, I really advise to have a good M&A company, what you guys working with early days, even if you don't think about M&A right now, maybe next 3-5 years, but it's a good time to start building those relations, because those opportunities coming like time to time. And also, by the way, it's a huge waste of your time. As you know, they're really sneaky. They're also kings of outreach, coming very, very kind of, hey, we have few customers for you here and here and here. And then you're spending time and realizing that they are really sneaking for insights, or sneaking for trying to acquire you, or just sourcing some stuff for you. And you have those M&A advisors just honestly passing those emails to them, saying, hey, this probably looks like this. And they take it like right now. And I just checked the statistic, like, since 2019 is a 700 those conversation happens. These guys saved me at least 700 hours.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Choose your acquirer and your M&A advisor wisely. That's going to help a lot.
And early.
And early. Yeah. That's true. All right. Well, the last question is always about a hack. And it can be anything. It can be something personal that, you know, helps you as a founder, or something that works in the company and you think would help others.
Oh, I think, but from my observation of my friends, early founders, first one is really tough to run alone, like having your co-founder. Even if you don't have one, please, and this is harder than dating, honestly. Like to find a real partner that you can go through all those kind of ups and downs, and it will definitely happen. Even in case of success, it will happen. In case of not success, it also happens. Your co-founder is a must have thing. You know, for example, YC not accepting any company if there's no two co-founders at least. Yeah, and I don't even hear like exceptions. It happens. The second one, be careful with your kind of personal health and productivity. I mean, I see a lot of great founders who became really tired and obsessed. Like, take time for your personal things, like for refocus. It's why, by the way, I'm living in San Mateo, you know, the Bay Area. I was really shocked how much people spent outdoor doing this cold plunge, yoga, meditation, some active stuff, because this needs your brain to refocus. Without that refocus, we're like Eastern European founders, you know, Anna, we can work 24 hours all in door, including the Sundays and Saturdays. It's not that, guys, it shouldn't be like that. You is a perfect balance. And I feel this, Computera guys, early days, we live in the everyday deploy. It means every night we have a deployment. And one day just, it's like in a movie, the developer stand up, drop the keyboard, drop the laptop, broke everything and just walked from the door. We never heard back from him. He not answered the phone. He blocked the phone. And I said, probably something we're doing wrong. It was a team of three of us, right? Like, believe me, when it's a team of three of you and one just living that way, this is really trouble. Yeah, and then we moved like weekly releases, etc. Yeah, keep the balance. I think this is two most important things, co-founder and keep your work and life balance, because it's really hard to overcome those challenges. And maybe just 0.01% of the founders can survive through those things. By the way, you saw the statistic that only like 0.4 companies passing through $5 million in IRR and 0.06 through 10. Just imagine how big selection is. A SaaS stock just will probably start in a few weeks, right? Their slogan on their website is only 0.04% companies made it over $10 million in IRR, and we exist to accelerate this number. But it's real true. A lot of things can go wrong. By the way, guys, the problem in the customers is like, I think the most easiest one. If you have a strong team that you rely on from there, you can run one company, one problem, then you can iterate and build another one. This absolutely all more or less the old companies, they same. But what is it not, what is it you will have after you've done all the stuff, these people who surround you. This is very important from day zero to care about your early day teams, your early founders. And this is really, really important.
Yep. That came at a very right time. I think, you know, just overall kind of this last bit about a hack, it has been about many things, but I think the recurring theme is exactly that, is that, you know what, this kind of all around 360 grind that was so sexy 10 years ago or even 5 years ago, now people are like, yeah, maybe not. Maybe we need to rethink that. And I think it's so much better. And it's no longer fun to read about founders who are like, you're tired? Well, pick up another project, work on that. It will be better. Yeah, no longer kind of feasible. And people who actually talk about, hey, you know what? I did that so I can walk my children to school every morning. That's the stuff.
Yeah, bro. You can't imagine how often I just dropping the kids and my kid to kindergarten and having the business call on that. It's really tough. Again, it's great. It means that people, they're passionate. I know like it's a bunch of my people, they can work Saturdays, Sundays. By the way, from DNA at Computera, actually, we always had the problem with our security guards and we have the kind of the house that is like with our own like three floor building. And like technically it wasn't allowed to work after 10 p.m. because there's a security perimeter, etc. But the people were spending in office till 1 a.m., 2 a.m. They just enjoy, you know, and coming very early, we have a food like breakfast, all the stuff. And they kind of, for some of them, this is your lifestyle today. I say it's not work and life balance. This is just this life, right? You, what you do and if you're just not working, right? And that's main. I really believe that if you're passionate enough, you will continue working. Do not be tough. But this is why I have opposite way. I trying to convince the people to take the time off. When the COVID hits, Anna, our velocity charge jumped like 2x. And I was scared. I first think what I told my operational director, say, brother, we need to convince people to go outside. Say, Alex, they have nothing to go. Sport clubs are closed. Restaurants are closed. Fitness clubs are closed. They just have only thing they're working. It's really tough because these burnouts are really real thing. And I saw the people who really was born out, and I was also experienced that, especially, you know, in this enterprise world, that people just trying to put you down for no reason, even when you're delivering cool results, but they're making millions of the dollars weekly, they're trying to squeeze like 50K on your contract. It's like you was always upset, like, what is wrong with this world? Yeah, and again, I think my only way to pass through all these challenges, what you're having at work, is no easy problems, guys, exist anymore. Right, it's like an Olympic game. If you, again, be honest with you, do you really compete, or are you going to Olympic? And this is, you can't go just three times a week for like football class and pretend that you will play in the national cup, right? You are need to dedicate your life to that and became that style. This is why in computer we never fixed over hours, working hours. If the team is decide what the time, because right now we spread it around 11 countries and we call this flexible hours. It means the team is decided what the best time slot for them, for their routines. And most of this is working asynchronously. And it has some benefits, of course, and some downsides. The culture thing is really hard to keep in this remote world. In the office, everyone is really friends and family. In the remote world is not, just be honest, you're not a family. I always say we're not a family, we're resident sport team. What I appreciate, like high-performance athletes love to work with high-performance athletes. And we can be good friends and appreciate each other, but we didn't polite for this kind of procrastination and not commit to complete. It's very thing to commit complete. Take one task, small one, just like for, I don't know, 1 hour. Or like, if you took it and not completed, this is what ruined the whole trust. All the rest, enjoy your life. Like, live in Portugal, live like in mountains. We have one guy, he said, Alex, I'm like a Pablo Escobar. I'm owning this village right now. I just bought it, everything. Like, he bought land by land. He said, I love it. Like, I love, my kids love, etc. I'm happy for him, you know, like, he don't want to move anywhere. Yeah, but I know how I can bring him back to the office is impossible. And I start appreciating those guys. They're super well organized and they work all life remotely, as assuming, Ghana, you do as well. And that is, as I think, this is a next level people that is called like digital nomads. That right now is like just evaluating to kind of normal thing, right? And try to get as much as you can those guys, like high performing athletes, what actually very self organized and don't need to remind. For example, one of my small tweak as well, I never remind anyone anything what I ask once. That's a very simple principle. I ask you something in the channel or in the direct message. I can ask urgent, not urgent. Sometimes we use it like urgent, important, not urgent, important, not urgent, not important. Like, that's it. Like in the brackets, just to the someone who receive it can understand where best way to answer. I will never follow up. Never. Every like will break back to me. That's for me the indication of the, and now I'm actually maybe blessed in my executive team is like 7 people. I have 0 people who can't not reply or not reply on time where I need this thing. That's it. It's just kind of just work ethic. That was just DNA of computer. And if we sometimes happens that and they know it, they will immediately like replace the boss. By the way, most firing what we've done is actually not the guy can do some time on hard skills. It's most about those soft skills, just basic thing like commit complete, polite, the way how you communicate with each other and how cool you are as a teammate. This is most reason for like we are stopping some agreements, not anything else. Because hard skills can be developed. Come on, in this world, that easy.
Whew. Yeah. Absolutely. Sorry. That's a great mini rant. But I completely agree. For us too, I think it's mostly just how we work together, because in such a big team, you can always find somebody who complements your hard skills and somebody maybe who can teach you something else. But if you're not fun to be around or you cannot really show the work ethic that we're all striving for, then that's
not, and it's never changed. You know, if you see this first 90 days in the person, this is the most productive days in your company or in your group. If we behave that way first like 3-4 weeks, done. It's never changed, just replace, it's fine. You just faster change, it will like find a new person ASAP and replace, because it's not going to change, especially if this is a new guy or girl in your team. This is what the huge learning as well. Like we done so many second tries, you know, say, hey, you see, this is like, it's why I also eliminate HR as a function. Like, this is why we have goal of AI. It's it. because it's like HR always trying to protect some things like that. Oh, I spoke with him. He know his mistake. He will fix it. He's not. Like, statistically, never. I don't remember any example of that. Like someone was, hey, you didn't ask for that guy, or you was rude on this conversation. They can be quiet for a few weeks, months, whatever. Then it will became again. You know, this is, people is not changed since, like, it's actually a scientific fact. After 22, 24, you can't change your soft skills. It's super hard, and you need to work at this very, very hard. It was like, again, statistically, most likely is what not happens with that person, particular person in your team. Maybe, of course, the chance is always never 0% chance, but in most likely it's not.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for sharing it. And I'm really, I would love to someday maybe pick your brain about this whole no HR thing, because that's very interesting. I've never heard about this
no HR
before.
Culture.
Yeah. But yeah.
By the way, Telegram, I just did a recent, this is a Dudorov podcast. They said that also no HR, no recruiting team. That's very cool. Yeah.
Yeah, but I think they're very small.
Yeah, they're about, but still like 40, 60 people.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. And also, yeah. I promise it to your audience to give you the link to this. I call it, yes, value based pricing kind of stuff. Yeah, I will also drop you the link. Just
cool. Yeah, I'll share it down there. But thanks for being here and looking forward to doing it again.
Thank
sometime.
You, Anna. Very nice questions. Thank you so much. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank
Enjoy
you.
Day. Bye.
Take care.
That was yet another awesome conversation on SaaS Unbound. We're always looking for new guests to share their experiences. We mostly talk with bootstrapped SaaS founders, and if you're one, reach out to me directly at anna@saas.group or find me on LinkedIn. If you're not bootstrapped or even not SaaS but have a great story to tell, we want to hear from you too. And obviously, SaaS Unbound wouldn't be possible without the SaaS Group, a founder-friendly private equity company that buys awesome businesses that people love to take them to even greater success. If you're thinking about selling your company or just exploring your options, feel free to visit saas.group, fill in the form, and expect a response in under 24 hours.